miserable and very sad. It's the loveliest, one of the loveliest passages in the whole of Matthew's Gospel, and it's a climax to this section. There's another passage I'll do after it, but this is the really beautiful passage, I'm sure you'll all agree. It's one of the few occasions where we have Jesus' prayer. So from this broken heart, from the rejected Messiah, that's what we're watching, the one who had compassion for the people because they were like sheep without a shepherd, goes out to them with love and all the miracles that we've seen, but now with a broken heart says, people aren't listening. Even John the Baptist is not sure what to do, it appears. And then Jesus' heart bursts with love, which is wonderful, because he looks at the ordinary people, the ordinary, the lepers and the people that did respond, the people without their theology and without their priesthood and without all this, the ordinary folk, there were at least a number of them responding. And Jesus says, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and the learned. Now, he's not thanking God for hiding anything from the wise and learned. The fact is, the wise and learned haven't seen it. But the wonderful thing for which he's thanking God is, you've revealed them to... Now, the nepios is the Greek. It means exactly what the English word infant means. Infans in Latin means not yet speaking, not able to form words. So he's talking about people who are so like children, but they don't know the right words. But they know love when they see it, and they grasp it, and trust it, and go with it. Those little ones who cannot speak. He doesn't mean babies, he means unless you become as a little child, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. He means simplicity, the child in us adults that listens. Father, this was for your good pleasure. All things, he says, have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son, Jesus, except the Father. That's his love affair, that's his intimacy, that's where Jesus' identity comes from. That's because our identity all comes from those who've loved us. Well, Jesus is loved by God, by the infinite Creator, Lord of heaven and earth. So he has this sense of meaning in his life and love. No one knows Jesus except the Father, he says. No one knows the Father except the Son and those whom the Son chooses to reveal him. We've seen enough to see from Matthew's Gospel that the Son wants to reveal the Father to everybody. He's not selecting some and not others. But again, the revelation only happens when somebody says, ah. Oh. The revelation only happens when somebody sees. And so there are some that are seeing and they're identifying with Jesus. They are his disciples. And then his heart goes out to everybody, including the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Herodians. There's no limit to this. Beautiful passage. In fact, I'll put it up for you to look at while I read it, because you know it so well. There it is, in ancient Slavonic. That's the language of Cyril and Methodius that they invented when they took from the Greek Christian church, which at that stage, of course, the whole church was one, back in the 10th century. And Cyril and Methodius, who were Greek speakers, went across into, I suppose, what we'd now call the Ukraine or Romania first, that kind of the Slav area. And they took the faith there in the, well, exactly 1,000 years ago. We celebrated it not that long ago, I think, the millennium of the faith going to the Slav people. Well, they invented this language because the people spoke but didn't have a written language, and it's basically Greek that's been moved and shifted a bit, and that's the ancient language of the Slav people still in their liturgy. Well, that text that you can see there is this text. I shall now read it. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you The law was often called a yoke. It kept people in, and if they pulled right, they'd go in the right direction. And Jesus takes the yoke of the law away. It's too hard. People can't succeed. They can't get into the synagogue. They can't get into the temple. Certain ways of life, they're excluded. There's no hope for them being in communion with God because of what happened to their mother or their father or their first marriage or who knows what. They're kind of tangled. They've got no way in according to the law. And then people say, you're in, you're out, you can do this, you can't do that. And Jesus just says, for God's sake, love them. So he just says, take my yoke. And he doesn't mean he dismisses the moral law. That's not what we're talking about. It's that only love will help us live it. So take my yoke and learn from me. For I am gentle. So everything we read of what Jesus just said, alas, woe, is all very gentle. I'm gentle and humble in heart. The spirituality of the heart of the Beatitudes. And you will find rest for your soul. Your breathing, yearning, inner being that's so mysterious even to us. And that's what he wants to give rest to. Anybody can relax on a chair somewhere, but what about your soul? Where's it going to find a home? For my yoke is easy, my yoke fits. It's well strapped and it's built just for you. It's custom built. And I'm going to carry it with you anyhow, says Jesus. My burden is light. As distinct from the yoke and the burden of the Torah. And that's what we'll have to spend our time after the break talking about. The big difference that Jesus made in Judaism that accounts for Christianity. So that beautiful passage is an invitation to you and to me, to everybody throughout history, when we're weary and burdened, to come to Jesus and he will give us rest. He will teach us the way of living, who God is and how to respond. He'll be very gentle with us, very humble, and our souls will find rest. You're not going to get a nicer passage than that in the whole of the New Testament, so enjoy it. There is some background to it. So you'll hear echoes of that beautiful statement now in these many little texts I'll give you for a little few minutes. First is about, well, a lot of them are about Moses. Moses, the law, representing the law, the beautiful Moses, again, a gentle person, a humble person, the meekest person in all the world, they reckon. The one who was able to suffer and carry the people through this long journey, even though most of them didn't know where they were going. And leadership, of course, people in leadership are easy targets for our cynicism, but to be a leader who actually leads gently and truthfully must be absolute heroic charity. No wonder some of the kings in the Middle Ages were made saints. To be in a position of leadership and to be a saint, that's it. I imagine it would be so hard. Well, Moses did it wonderfully, all the burden of leading. But Moses said to the Lord, "See, you've said to me, bring up this people, but you haven't let me know whom you will send with me. You've said," he complains to God, "I know you by name and you have found favor in my sight. Well, if I have found favor in your sight, show me your ways." That's the Torah. Show me your ways. Reveal to me your way of acting and how we're to respond so that I may know you and find favor in your sight. Consider that this nation is your people. So reveal the Torah to us. And that's what God does. And the Lord said, "My presence will go with you and I will give you rest." The Torah was meant to give rest to people so that we'd know what to do, how to walk, who to listen to, how to live, what was worth doing. And it did that beautifully. But we human beings tend to then tie it down and organize it and then use power over it and all that. But that's straight from Moses. Again, we're told about Moses. "With Moses I speak face to face, clearly, not in riddles. He beholds the form of God. No one knows the Father except the Son." Moses knew God beautifully. So the Old Testament says he saw God face to face. No one knew God the way Moses did. And now we're watching the new Moses, the new lawgiver of the Beatitudes, the Mount of Beatitudes, we're watching the Messiah, the one who fulfills all that Moses ever did in a far more beautiful way. Deuteronomy, at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, almost the last words, "Never since has there arisen a prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." Well, here we are now looking on the face of one who has arisen and who transcends and surpasses Moses. Paul, looking at Jesus, says, "Now we see in a mirror dimly." The mirrors, as you remember, were not like our mirrors. They were made of just bronze. It was metal. And the reflection, if you look in a metal, bronze, not perfectly clear sheet, but a bit of bronze, it's all, you know, you get a... That was their mirrors. So they were pretty distorted. "Now we see in a mirror dimly. Then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I am fully known." We all want to be fully known. And when you're in love with someone and they don't really know, well, no one really knows us fully in this life. We hardly know ourselves. We don't know ourselves. So, but if someone knows you really deeply, it's very comforting and very a beautiful gift, a life gift, I suppose. Well, we will be known. And that should fill us with joy. Verse 65, "I was ready to be sought out by those who didn't ask. I was ready to be found by those who didn't seek me," says God. "I said, 'Here I am, here I am,' to a nation that didn't call on my name. I held out my hands all day long to a rebellious people." And that's a bit what Jesus has been doing in the last two chapters, stunned by Capernaum's unwillingness to accept the good news, and Chorazin and Bethsaida, and the general populace rejecting their shepherd Messiah. And to conclude this little meditation on that lovely text of Matthew with Jeremiah 6:16. If you've got an artistic temperament, and you probably have, and if you're someone whose feelings lead you in all kinds of directions, which you probably are, and you're wondering which prophet to read, read Jeremiah. He's the most human of them all, and very passionate and a lovely poet. And you're not in touch with the grandeur of Isaiah, but you're in touch with a very real human being who struggles every inch of the way and does it beautifully. "Thus says the Lord, stand at the crossroads and look and ask for the ancient paths, where the good way lies, and walk in it, and you'll find rest for your souls." Walking in the ways of tradition, you will find rest for your souls, says Jeremiah. But they said, "We will not walk in it." And now here's Jesus speaking to those who claim to be the upholders of tradition, telling them there's a new way to walk that's perfectly consistent with their ancient path, but is so beautifully beyond it that it's only recognizable if someone has a heart to be loved.